Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday.
Welcome to the show. Sorry about that. Had to make sure I cut out some background noise here. Number is 347-850-1065. That's 347-850-1065. All right. Don't know how long I'm going to be here tonight. It's kind of impromptu. Just wanted to talk about some things that's been on my mind. You know, in this election cycle, all right, the thing that got me disappointed is how a lot of these older Black people in the civil rights movement, around the civil rights age, how things are for the younger Black people compared to all these other groups. Now, some of the things I'm going to talk about going to ruffle some feathers, and but some things that need to be said. First things first, the civil rights movement, at the end of the day, did nothing for us. The only thing it did for us was give us what we already had. We already socially integrated. So think about this. Think about it for a second. And the thing they won't tell you is, you know, Dr. King, his mentality on that, it had evolved before he got killed. They didn't kill him based on marching and being peaceful. They killed him when he started talking about money. All right. So with that being said, problem is that, think about it. We had people marching for equal opportunity, jobs, the right to shop anywhere. Excuse me. Couple of things on that. First, how can we measure equal opportunity? How can we measure equality? Equality is immeasurable. It makes no sense to try to measure something that's immeasurable. How do we know we get equal opportunity? And see, the problem is that we get equal opportunity in white people's establishments, their institutions. Not anything that we built as a people, but things they built. See, how can we go up to these people and say, oh, you're oppressing us, but they were begging them for jobs, begging them for housing, begging them for loans, begging to stay in hotels and catch a cab. So at the end of the day, all we got accomplished was being able to sit anywhere on a bus, touch on that in a second, stay in anyone's hotel, eat anyone's restaurant, while we make it feel richer and we ended up not having any of our own. I would love to ask those civil rights people, what sense did it make? What sense did it make for us to fight, to spend money and make white people richer if they didn't want you there in the first place? If you don't want me in this restaurant, fine. I'm not giving you my money. If you don't want me to sit in the front of the bus, I got to sit in the back, I'll start my own bus line. If you don't want me in your grocery store, fine. I get my own grocery store. I don't go where I'm not wanted. And now we're talking about voting, because you bled on the bridge, like Representative John Lewis talks about, bled on the Selma Bridge and got knocked over the head by police. Why is it that every time these civil rights people, the few people that march and participate in those movements, they always talk about how they were beaten up? You can't pass down an ass whipping. You can't pass down being hosed down. The question I would ask is, where are those institutions that were passed down to their children and their grandchildren? What was the mentality of never again? You may have gotten us this time, but we're going to put ourselves, our children, our grandchildren, great-grandchildren beyond to not be in that position. For instance, now, I'm from Montgomery, Alabama, and many of you guys might already know this. That's where the Montgomery bus boycott was at, ironically named Montgomery, but Montgomery, Alabama, Rosa Parks was at. And I was talking about this to someone, and I said, the bus boycott failed. And people don't want to admit that, but it failed for this reason, because we got back on the buses. We never created our own bus line there in that city. I was like in my 30s. And I remember as a kid, they had a nice little bus system there. And so let's say they had 20 buses in Montgomery, Alabama. Let's just say they had 20. Me and Chubby had black people there. We couldn't pull our resources at the time and get at least 3, 4, 5 buses. Or have, like, I know they had systems where they were picking people up, people were walking. But even like a bus line, once they start saying, oh, we let you sit there. Because they ended up winning They ended up winning regardless because you did not create your own bus line, your own public transit system. You had to get back on their buses. How was that empowerment? And let's just be honest with another thing. The reason those powers to be, the members of dominant society hate when we talk about black economic empowerment because that means they'll lose a lot of money. Who else will stay in those hotels? Who else is going to hop in those cabs? Speaking of cabs, why haven't our civil rights generation went to say, yeah, we got our own business here at the time. Why didn't we grow those businesses, creating institutions, create our own yellow cap all over, that kind of franchised all over the country where white people don't want to pick you up? This black company will pick me up and had no issues. Just think about it. Because right here, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona, and had an old neighbor of mine. He's a Mexican and started a Spanish-speaking cab service. It's in all in Spanish. Where you post on Facebook, it's in Spanish. And so the Mexicans in town can't get robbed from Yellow Cab. They got his company. And so my beef is that 50 years after the Civil Rights Movement, we got these people still talking about, man, we shall overcome. Let's turn the other cheek. Let's march. Let's be peaceful. Let's pray on it. It didn't work then, and it is not going to work now. What's going to work is black economic empowerment. As a wise man once told me, follow the money, stupid. You got to follow the money. Because we're the poorest people, and if you know anything about money, the poorest people are the easiest targets. How are you going to fight back? Because, see, for instance, it all ties here. Think about all those times those black people got hosed down, beaten, shot, lynched, you know, dog sicked on. We could have a war if we wanted to because, one, we never created guns. We don't have any factories that create guns and bullets. We don't have any factories that create, like, armaments like grenades. We don't have anything that created like, you know, Kevlar vests and helmets and tactical gear. We don't have any of those. White people do. But the problem is that we've been passed down this subservient mindset, this docile mindset, this mindset of, hey, it'll come one day. You know, the Lord will bless you one day in the afterlife. Or just work hard, dress nice, be nice, and they'll treat you good. Well, let's be real here. Martin Luther King wore a suit, got shot. Malcolm X wore a suit, got shot. So what happened then? Now, I know black people shot Malcolm X, but you get my point. It's not about how you dress. You can't, disrespectability in politics hasn't worked then, it's not working now. We have to empower ourselves. We have to stop holding reverence to these people like a Representative John Lewis. Yes, he marched 50 years ago, but what have you done now? Atlanta's being gentrified out. All those black people there, nothing's been built. No policy set. But yet, when you have Jewish people after the Holocaust, now mind you, the government gave them, go break them off some reparations, but we can't get it done. You know, it happened on German soil. Now, it was a, you know, tragic incident, tragic time, but we should not, but we don't get anything, but they do. And it happened on German soil with them. What about our black seniors? You know, so that's another thing there. And those civil rights people aren't bringing that up, especially the ones sitting in the office. Now, back to, like, I was talking about the Jewish community. Mind you, after that Holocaust, look at how many of them are lawyers, doctors, judges, police officers. These people are running Hollywood. Look at your banking industry. Prominent positions, all and controlled by them. You have to abide by their rules because they own and control it. He who has the money, he who has the infrastructure makes the rules. Say what you want to about them. Their children have stuff to get back to. You know, like I hear Phoenix, ex-girlfriend of mine, we went to get lobsters one time at this Vietnamese market, their supermarket. And well, they had like some huge lobsters to get your money's worth. And so I told her, hey, peep game on this. Look, you see this shopping center, this strip? Count the Asian businesses here. And look at how many are written in English. Titles of business are in English, but also in their native Asian language. And not just we watching this, and also they have a dental office there. Title office written in English, and also the Vietnamese, that's right, they were all people, everybody's Vietnamese there. So we went in the store and I said, babe, look, peep game on this. Besides the one white guy cutting meat, everybody there was Asian. The kids are working, you know, the boys bagging groceries, the girls working the cashier line. You got guys that look like they, you know, Asian guy, like they might have had a rough time, but they got work. But my point on that is, when you got cities like Chicago where black teenage boys got 95% unemployment rate, and you don't know the big reason that is? Because nothing was built for us. Nothing was built for us. We were told to go to school, get a good job. Problem is, who controls those jobs? Not us. The dominant society control those jobs. So at the end of the day, we still having to beg white people to give us jobs. How could you live with yourself when you tell your child that? When you got other groups here who are passing something down. You could have a restaurant and your kid work in a restaurant, pass it down to them, and they have something at least. All we have is go to school, find a good job, and we barely even get direction for that. What in the hell is a good job? How many of your parents got on at the state or at the plant, and ask yourselves this before you answer? How many of those jobs are plentiful right now? How many openings those two places I said have? Your plants are gone, pretty much. Your state jobs are filled up by people who will be there until they can't come to work anymore. For instance, you know, my uncle through marriage, you know, he has a pretty high position in the sanitation department in my hometown. And he told me that's a waiting list just to get on the sanitation department. So that's a wait list to be the trash man. It's going to be a wait list for those state jobs, so it's hard to get on. So what are you doing? What are you preparing these kids? What have we been told? We've been told a bill of goods. I'm sorry, sold a bill of goods. Hill of beans. That's what it is, a hill of beans. I'm sorry. I cannot get it right. But the problem is that, just think about it. Even like where I'm at in Phoenix, you go to pockets of town, they got areas that are straight Mexican, locked down. Grocery stores, auto shops, they're all nightclubs, they're all like restaurants, you know, all kind of things. Where is theirs? Your grocery store may not be Albertsons or Kroger if you live down south, or Publix like you live down south, or Safeway. But it's theirs. They own and control it. Where's ours? We still complain about food deserts, but why did the civil rights generation take that opportunity to ensure that we got some policy, some access to capital to assure that their children, their grandchildren, their great-grandchildren would not have to go through what they've gone through? Hell, you know, you got these civil rights leaders talking about, yeah, I've been beaten up by police and all this stuff. Why in the hell are young black people still being beaten up by the police and shot with impunity, unarmed? That should have been over and done with. But see, here's the issue. We control non-economics. And the other issue is, do those civil rights leaders, did they have our best interests at heart? Or were they more concerned with securing a future or seeing a table for themselves? This is where I'm getting at here. How many of you got the John Lewis and other civil rights people out there talking about Hillary Clinton? Hillary Clinton. We got to vote. We got to back Hillary Clinton. So you mean to tell me that we are supposed to back the same person who stood by her husband when he created some of the harshest crime laws that targeted black people? And when she was a senator in New York, did not step foot in front of Congress one time to say, hey, these laws are terrible. They are targeting black people and ruining lives. Guy with an ounce of crack in his pocket should not be doing 30 years. She did not step out front and denounce that at all. The only time she spoke out on it, she needed votes. So that just shows that we as a people were passed down nothing. If we were passed down like an economic base, institutions, we could buy our politicians. They'd be doing our bidding. What are we doing now? It's still begging for a white savior. And at worst, the worst part about it is now we're looking at a white woman to save us from the supposed big boogeyman, Donald Trump. And then you got these people talking about, well, Bernie Sanders talking about he marched in the civil rights movement, participated. Then you got these black civil rights people, well, I didn't see him there. To be real with you, who cares? It was 50 years ago. Who cares who marched with who right by this time? 2016. We had a 2016 issue. We got cities being gentrified out. We got black people that can't even fight back against the governor of Michigan, and their water's contaminated. The water's so brown, look like sweet tea. Also, real quick, number again is 347-850-1065. Hit the number one if you want to talk. Excuse me, just let you know, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, but but we'll get some things in my mind. And I also want to thank everyone when you listen to this show, the archives. You know, 50 years ago, we were still begging white people to save us, and we're doing it now. We're the only group that's begging white people to save us. We're the only group that has to talk about lesser two evils. We don't even have a sense to build our economic base to buy a politician, rent, lease a politician. Because look at how many, think about it. All those people that were so happy, those civil rights people, when President Obama won. I voted for him the first time, and I even donated his campaign a nice sizable amount, but when I realized he wasn't doing anything for black people, I was out. I didn't vote again. But what happens is you get all these civil rights black people say, well, I fought for the right for you to vote, and you should go out there and vote. And I always respond with, for whom? What reason should I vote for these candidates? And why are we in a position where we are scared of a candidate? Do you see Asians running around why they're scared of Trump? Hell, you don't really have Latinos saying they're scared of Trump, and he's been talking slick about them for years. Here's the thing. When he was talking slick about Mexicans, they brought out Carlos Slim, one of the richest people on earth. When people talk slick about us, who do we trot out? Pastors. Pastors don't move weight like that. Businessmen, billionaires, men with money like Carlos Slim move weight. Here's the other thing. Since the civil rights generation never built anything for us, think about this. Y'all got mad at Trump for what he said about other groups like Muslims and, you know, Latinos. Here's the thing. Donald Trump, unlike some of these blacks, all these black celebrities, think about it. He's doing the one thing they're too scared to do, speak his mind. He is willing to speak his mind, say what he believes, doesn't care if he's wrong or not, he's going to speak it. Excuse me. But yet you have rich black men out there. I'm talking to black males because I look at men differently, who are afraid to speak out on white supremacy, or like LeBron's afraid to even speak out on Tamir Rice, who was 12 years old, was gunned down by the Cleveland police officer, Timothy Loman. And by the way, if I remember correctly, I think LeBron's oldest son is around the same age as what Tamir Rice is, or what. Yeah, black man worth hundreds of million dollars, scared to speak up. And then when you think about it, we've been taught to be employees. We've been fed by the civil rights generation, be employees, fight for jobs, but not create jobs where we take care of our own and not subject our children to beg for jobs where our children can speak out against injustice. Where our children could get a fair wage compared to their white, Latino, male, female counterparts. But we were taught just fine. Equal opportunity. How do you have equal opportunity if we don't have our own? If we had our own, then you could say equal opportunity. Now, I'm not saying I hate white people or anything of that sort. But say you have a black guy, a black man, I own a business, own a company. Let's say if I had a black version of IBM. White person's qualified, I hire that white person as well. You know, he can service you, everything like that. But the problem is that black people only have one place to go. There's nothing that we created. Because let's just say there's a Waffle House in town. We should have a black version of that as well. White movie theater, should have a black movie theater. civil rights generation fought for white people to let us in. And what do you have now? In many of these poor neighborhoods that black people are in, they're food deserts. If you don't know what that is, when you go to a black neighborhood, look at like where the grocery store's at. It's a nice distance away. Like right now, I live in the suburbs out here in Phoenix, one of these suburbs. At Albertsons, it's like 3 minutes away from me. And a Fry's grocery store, as you know, people may know of Fry's Electronics. They have a grocery store as well. That's like 5 minutes away. So I got five grocery stores right there. And while I'm up, might as well say this. The civil rights generation never pushed for black people to own businesses, to have their own. Yeah, we should not be turned away from a hotel, white hotel or white restaurant, white movie theater, white gas station. We shouldn't. But we should have our own as an alternative. Because, for example, why do we need to drive miles down the road to go to a white grocery store? And that money's not going to be with us. Why didn't they push for us to get access to loans, to start up businesses, to start up institutions for us? Because it's, let's be real here. So many were just happy with their seat at the table. While we have kids right now who can't even like find a job that with a college degree. Look at how many of these black kids now gone to school, got a business, you know, went to school, looking for a good job, can't get a job. Who control those jobs? White people. But we, like I said before, yes, we should not be shut out from going and visiting those establishments, but we should not be trying to force people who don't want us there to give them our money. And also, we should have taught us to have our own where we could employ our own. That's some of the things that I believe is missing. Some of the things that have been said, because we could try this whole we'll vote for Hillary because we fought for the right to vote. But when you do vote, what interest does it serve? What interest did it serve 50 years ago when all we got were the access to go into white businesses? We got a call here, 215 area code. And again, people, number 347-850-1065. Like I said, I don't know how long I'm going to be here, but I just wanted to get some things off my chest here. 215-279. Welcome to the Impromptu Show.
Good evening, Sergeant Smithers.
Hey, what's good, man? What's good, Don Calypso?
I am well. It is a beautiful 66 degrees in the city of brotherly love. A very welcome change from how the temperature has been lately.
Yeah.
It is such a welcome difference that I actually shaved off my Rabbi Shlemiel von Rosenblatt beard and actually look like a regular Haitian man again. Yes, I was a black Jewish rabbi for a few months. It served me well as far as insulation. You know, but, you know, it was time to move on. Just like marching and boycotting, I'm pretty sure at one point it served Negroes during the Civil War era, but it's not doing anything now. But that's a whole other show.
Oh, that's pretty much the gist of it. Because, you know, marching and boycott, to me, it brings awareness. But what after the marching and boycott? It's just like all these black people talk about boycott Black Friday. But that's no alternative. You still got to go to Best Buy if you want a TV. So
instead of boycotting Black Friday, they should have said, you know, make Black Friday black by doing black, you know, Black Friday for black businesses. You know, that would have been better than boycotting Black Friday. You know, instead of telling people don't shop for Christmas, tell them shop with black businesses for Christmas, you know? And you know how a lot of times we always hear people, ask, especially the HOTEP crowd, asking about, well, what the church is doing stuff. At the church where I attend, the pastor said, he was like, instead of doing that whole boycott, you know, he said it was ironic how the Muslims were with the whole up with Jesus, down with Santa thing. But he said, instead of boycotting Christmas, how about if everybody, some of that money that you're going to spend to buy gifts and stuff, how about if everybody took a couple hundred dollars and opened an account in one of the local black-owned banks, you know? So that would provide the capital for black-owned banks to provide loans and stuff for black people who need businesses and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I missed half of the conversation, so I'm not sure what direction you went before I tuned in.
That's
as you can
fine.
Tell from the background, I'm on my way home from work, but yeah.
That's fine. You know, I just want to get on, talk for a bit, you know, just kind of put stuff, information and some stuff out there. Because Saturday I'm going to be kind of busy. Thing is that I always talk about all kinds of different things. And one thing I wanted to touch on as well was that I always talked about like how the civil rights generation, they fought for jobs, equal opportunity, but you can't measure equality as immeasurable. And it kind of makes no sense to beg white people for, like, not say beg white people for jobs, but it's that we should have an alternative where we can hire those bright black people also. And,
let's be honest. Right now, it kind of does make sense. I mean, unless we're talking about, you know, there's a lot of black barber shops and beauty salons, but how many black owned biotech companies do you have? How many black owned pharmaceuticals?
You know what I think?
There probably are, but I don't know about it. How many black-owned engineering firms that do, like, construction, you know, that entirely black-owned and majority black employees?
You know what I think? You know what I think? There's a theory of mine.
Right.
You know, I know you haven't been around this country for, you know, forever, but for so many years, but...
15 years.
You know, all right. And when I grew up, I was always told, go to college, get a good job. All right, what the hell is a good job? You know, but here's the thing also. How many black kids do you see that have the talent? We all see them. They have a talent for science, you know, like engineering. They have the attributes for it. They love it. But how many of them actually get pushed for that? Or even tech, like IT, we don't get pushed for that. How many black kids do you see get told, hey, get on at the state, you know, or hey, try to get this job at the plant. But you know this, those plants are gone. And by the way, people, if you hear that door, that's for Don Calypso, Blaine Dunn. But his car, he's driving. But also, like I said, I said those state jobs, they're hard to come by because people don't leave those federal state jobs. So I look at it like this, we don't really push our children to go into those fields and the children who are bright enough to go into them. Now look at how many of these black people out here who, like the brother, create the cell phone. You know, you had a black man create the gas mask. You know, you have black men and women create all this stuff. Black man did the first open heart surgery. Hell, even Dr. Ben Carson. So it's political views all you want, but last time I checked, the best brain surgeon on the planet. So we have black people that are smarter to do it, but it seems like that we don't push them to do it. We just push people to survive and also play sport.
Look at it this way. I could be totally wrong, but from my limited vantage point, a black person that – I mean, I remember years back, I think I was probably either in college or grad school, when some kid in Nigeria actually managed to build a helicopter. Whole meal, you know? Like, raw engineering without, like, that wasn't some kid in a university or something. That's some kid who just did it, you know? And you have a lot of black talent, but in at least in this culture here in the States. Now in Haiti, they do push you to do like academically well. That's something that people, they value education. But here, what I've noticed is a lot of times, if you're black, if you were going to science and stuff, you're perceived as odd, as a sellout, as a weirdo. Like when I started college, an undergrad, we were about 119, 120 in my intro to biology class. And out of that 119, 120, about, I think there may have been nine black students. My professor, who's white, my first advisor, he had told me, he was like, you see out of all these people here? He's like, don't be surprised if out of the 119, only 19 of you guys total graduate as bio majors. And guess what? That was probably about out of all of us that started. Oh, forgive me. There's an ambulance that just rode by. My bad.
Okay.
Shout out to the Philadelphia Fire Department. But, yeah. And out of those, there was not one that started in my freshman class. Not one other black student that graduated as a bio major. I was the only one. There were a couple of others afterwards. And I think... Actually, the department secretary, who had been there for a while, she said I was probably the first black student to finish as a bio major in a good many years. A lot of other black students, they switched majors. They went, some of them went to business, and some of them went to what I call the soft sciences, like, you know, anthropology, sociology, that I have some respect for. I mean, a lot of black people, they looked at me and the other Caribbean and African students funny, because a lot of times we'd be in study groups with the white kids, but that's what you have to do if you want to succeed in the hard sciences. You know, you got to have study groups and stuff. The black kids were just not interested. You know, I mean, I saw the black students I saw, like, studying applied physics were from Africa or the islands. The American black students, most of them went into the social sciences or business. So we got to push black kids in the STEM field. Because, I mean, and they're going to have to start going to work for the white man or something. Unless, because you need to have black people who are business-minded, who want to start the firm and hire those engineers and hire the scientists.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's my point there.
Why don't you go back to Haiti and start a lot? I'm like, I'm not a fucking business person. I'm a scientist. I'm a bench scientist. That's where my talents lie. You want someone you want extract DNA from animal tissue? I can do that. You know, you want to grow a mouse colony? I can do that. I'm not a fucking civil engineer to build a lab. That's not my thing. And that's why a lot of folks don't understand. And when I hear those hotep Negroes talking about, get your own business. Just like not everybody is cut out for college, not everybody is cut out for a 9-to-5, not everybody's cut out to be an entrepreneur, you know. You're still going to need, and if you want to be a black business person, you want to have a thriving business that makes buku money, you're going to have to hire employees. You're going to have to hire people who are best suited to do the job.
Yeah,
it looks like black
that,
America had that before, you know, before integration. You had the black businesses, you know, you had the black firms, all the different sectors that the black community needed. You had black businesses to fill that need, and after integration, those businesses went under because the black consumer base decided to go with Mr. You know, give their dollar to Mr. Charlie, as they say. At least
you know what?
That's how I understand it.
Let me ask you this, all right? Because I'm from, from Montgomery, Alabama, with the Montgomery Boys bus boycott. I said earlier before you called in that it was a failure because I said black people ended up getting back on the bus. And I was like, black people, if they don't want you sit, I said, why don't you create your own bus line? If you don't have 3 or 4 buses, so be it. You know, but it's yours. And I'd be like, I'd rather wait or sit in this bus stop longer than I had to sit, take this white bus where they got to make me sit in the back. But it's ours. You may have 3 or 4 buses, but it's ours. And And that's what main thing is I was saying. It's like it makes no sense. If we look at the movement for a minute, because you know this, Dr. King wasn't shot because he was talking about equal opportunity and all that stuff. He was shot because he was talking about the economic, you know, reparation. That's what he was shot.
Yeah, he got shot because of economics and because he spoke out against the whole, you know, the Vietnam War and the military-industrial complex.
Yep, the money. And so my thing was that
the same thing that Eisenhower, you know, you guys know your first real black president, if you go by the one drop rule, was Ike Eisenhower, right?
I remember him. I actually saw that speech. It's on YouTube. Hey, he was talking about that beginning as someone who was in the military.
Yeah.
I don't say a word. I just keep it quiet. But, you know, but the thing is that what we don't, as a people, it's like I always believe it because I actually investing in a couple of businesses myself, you know, and I worked on one for myself.
Yeah.
So I always believe it's that, hey, even if you're not cut out from one, you know, at least invest in something because the way it is now, because like now with the way the economy is, we got to have multiple streams of income or even like someone's just consulting, you know. It's just all kind of multiple streams. But the thing I wanted to say was, for example, like that's why not creating institutions. We complained about the same stuff 50 years ago, 50 years now. For example, this whole Zoe Saldana playing Nina Simone. And all these black people are upset that, oh, man, how come they got Zoe Saldana? They couldn't get such and such to play this role. And people get quiet when I say this. I said, one, it's a white studio making this, so they can do whatever they want with their money. It's their money. They can do what the hell. They can cast whomever they want, no matter what you like it or not. Also, if Nina Simone was that important to y'all, why didn't she make a movie a long time ago?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I say this also. Let's say if Spike Lee did it, it's like looking for donations, whatever, like, hey, do a crowdfunding, help me out, whatever. How many of y'all would have donated $10 at least to help Spike Lee out? I'm going to use him as an example. I know he did a crowdfunding for Chirac. You know, how many of y'all would have helped out? Because, see, what these black people understand is it's not just one white person funding money for these movies. It is a team of people, or even like your sports teams. It's not just one guy who owns a team. The Cowboys are different. Dallas Cowboys are different, or the Lakers. Most of these teams are owned by groups, like investment groups, 5, 6, 7 people putting in money. And I put it on the best way possible. When y'all saw George Zimmerman, GoFundMe, those were a lot, because you could see the people who bet, like not bet, I'm sorry, but think about my gambling, the people who donated. Those are a lot of $10, $15, $20 donations, but it adds up. So if Nina Simone was played by a naturally dark-skinned woman, was that important to you? Why did you make it? And I believe that's the trickle-down effect of the civil rights movement because we never was really taught to, hey, we can go over here or whatever. We can go to this movie theater. We should have our own movie theater also. We should have the option. But we don't have the option. Or also, we don't control our images. I want to know, find me somebody who's not Jewish who will make an Anne Frank movie. It ain't happening.
Yeah, I know.
You know, but we allow them to control our images and get mad. First question I would have is, who the hell controls the estate? Yeah, that's my first question. Two, why did anyone, look at all these rich black people, for example. For example, like Will Smith, everybody, they want to complain about the Oscar. His production company pretty much all white. You mean to tell me there aren't no talented black people that could have worked for Will? That's a problem. Or you got Tyler Perry. I don't hate Tyler Perry. I don't have a beef with him. My only complaint is, hey, Tyler, after all this time, all the money you made, and you pretty much famous now, Why you got to be the star still? Take a step back. Let somebody else be the star. You know, so we got the black money there, but we don't come together. But you got white actors like Brad Pitt got his own production company and directing. Clint Eastwood, you call these people white supremacists all they want, but they're not just depending on just being an actor. They want to control something, say we have a production company. In case I don't get these roles, I can still do a movie still. Because you can't be an action star when you, it's hard to be an action star when you're 60. Rare occasions, unless you're Schwarzenegger, and you can tell he's limited. So you have to create something and also have something to pass down. Or like, let's say you don't own a business, for example. Let's say you don't. Why are your kids still going to school depending solely on the student loan? Why aren't your kids going out there to compete? Because, like, for example, everybody's mad at Trump. So, well, his daddy gave him money. His daddy's supposed to give him money. You know, that's what his dad's supposed to do. Oh, he failed these businesses. A lot of entrepreneurs fail more often than they succeed.
Yeah, you got to fail quite a few times before you finally strike gold, from my understanding.
Yeah, and his dad gave him the money. That's what a father's supposed to do. He created something. Hey, here's some money for you to start your own thing, son. And that's it. It's like a wrestler, WWE. Best man, yeah. Grandfather
that is
started.
How you build the wealth. Build the wealth generationally by passing it down. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time.
Yeah.
I'm going to mute myself a quick second again. I'm at the cashier here.
Okay, cool.
I don't know if you guys don't have Wawa in Arizona, but it's they make some very good sandwiches over there.
I don't know. Don't worry. Yeah. I yap away too. Hey, just jump in when you're ready.
Yeah.
But, you know, thing is, like, I just look at WWE, for example. Then WWF, and I grew up. Vince McMahon's grandfather started with a friend of his. Then Vince Sr. Vince Sr. sold it to Vince McMahon Jr., the one we see now on TV. And now his children, his daughter Stephanie or his son Shane, going to be running that thing in a couple of years. But they have children who going to be running it as well. When they get older or pass away and pass on, they can run that as well. As generational wealth is building, you put your kids in position. And also, use Shane McMahon as an example for my wrestling fans who may know this. That's Vince McMahon's son, Vince Jr.'s son, the Vince McMahon we see on TV now. He was working as a referee, you know, in the business, learned the business. So like how a lot of these Asian people do with their kids in these restaurants. Hey, yo, come bust these tables, work in this restaurant. You learn the business, but also what happens is these people are taught to have pride in the family business. It's not a hustle. It is a business. It is a legacy. We were never taught legacy.
I think, instead of us continuing to bemoan that we were never taught that, that's one of the things that if you ever read the Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad, he talks about how, you know, his friend's dad, that he called his rich dad, had them work all different areas of his business so they could understand it, you know. It didn't just hand you a business to manage. It's like you learn how to work it and stuff. So, yeah, that's a. I mean, that's a sensible way to go. And sometimes, but even if you don't have a job, like you mentioned earlier, as far as the whole thing with investing, that's another thing. When people talk about, oh yeah, you don't want to just have a job and before, you know, you want to have your own business. But when you have your own business, you are still somewhat of a slave. You're still working for the client. You gotta, you know, you may set your own hours, but it's not the same as when you invest and you just get residual income. Your money works for you. So that's another option, you know. That's what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and see, like, I remember Dr. Boyce Watkins put a post up saying in 2009 is that if you invested, put $100 in stock on Netflix, you would have had 13,000 right now, 13,900 right now. And see, that stuff is legacy, cause last time I checked, he could pass that down. And so, correct me if I'm wrong on that, but the thing is that ain't just something that if he had a rainy day, you could pull it out and something happens.
Yep.
And you got something. And so the problem is, like, even like he got, I'll use like Boyce Watkins as an example. He does his black business school, and I'm going to sign up for it myself. But you got, like, pretty much the school, the workshop, you might pay $200 or $300 for it, if I remember correctly. And pretty much the cost of a class at your local community college. There are a lot of black people that will say, oh, they trying to hustle. They trying to hustle me out of my money, blah, 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 blah. But look at these other groups. They'll be like, oh, I'll pay it. You know, because they don't, or we as people don't understand, people ain't going to be consultants for free. You got to pay them for a service.
Yeah, but it's not just that. It's the thing is, you're better off paying the people. They're going to pay the cost for that one course. They're going to pay for some bullshit underwater basket weaving class in community college, whereas the and it's not going to serve them for anything, whereas taking a course like on how to invest is going to serve them for life.
Yeah, because these whites, pretty much white people run these schools. They're not going to teach you how to invest and start a business because that's not in their best interest. And that even racism is in their best interest. Because, get this, if they don't want you to learn about business, starting a like business or investing, guess what? That means you'll be a bean counter. They want you to be in there. They don't want you to kind of get your own and threaten them. Now, if you're happy being an employee, that's fine. That's your business. But,
well, you know what?
Intended.
You could still be an employee, but in the meantime, you stack your paper. Well, look,
yep.
Here's another thing. Again.
You got to build it first. Let me say this real quick, Don. Here's the thing. A lot of people who I got friends of mine I grew up with that started business. They always say, hey, a lot of times you got to get that job, learn that, like, what you want to do. Get in there, work it, learn it, stack your paper. They still have to work for a little bit while you get your business started. And then once you get some money going, you break away. Sorry, go ahead, Don. Hey, can you hear me, Don? All right, there you go.
Hey, sorry about that. I had to go. I had to click it over the other line. The wife was calling.
Yeah.
So I kind of missed what you said. You said you had some friends who started a business. And then,
Yeah. What happened? They started them, but what happened? They told. They always said, "Hey, you know, you, whatever you want to do, you can say you want to own a laundromat. I'm using that as a dry. Let's use a dry cleaner for example. Work at a dry cleaner. See how it works. See how everything works in there. Learn it. How to do all like you know. Learn everything about it on their dollar. Save your money. Then break off and do your own. But sometimes you may still have to work somewhere." Why do you get not the funding, but the income rolling in to for you to get out on your own? And so many black people just say, hey, I'm out my own, got my business. But sometimes you got to do, hey, your hands multiple cookie jars. And here's the thing also a black business failing. Also, we got to spend that money in advertising. I hear all these black people talking about, oh, we have a black business directory. If you don't need a black business directory online, if you advertise your business, you spend the money to advertise. You know?
Well, yeah, well, there's that too, but I can't speak in generality, but what I've heard hearsay is that sometimes with some businesses, unfortunately, you got some black folks when they own a business, they don't think in terms of reinvesting the profits into the business. You know, it's like, any profit made, they want to spend it, you know, on, you know, getting a nice car, the rims, you know, as opposed to reinvesting the business so it can make it more profitable.
Yeah, and you know, with business, here's a problem. Because, like, for example, like in my hometown, I touch this real quick. We actually got real live food deserts in my hometown, Montgomery, Alabama. Like, all these black neighborhoods, these so-called black neighborhoods. And I tell an auntie of mine, I'm like, look at this. I was like, why don't, instead of complaining about white people not putting stores there, because if they got the money, they can put the store wherever the hell they want to. And, you know, I said, look, why haven't, I always look at men differently when it comes to women, than women. Look at how many dope boys you got there, guys with new J's on their feet, hoverboards, all that stuff. Why don't we have a bunch of guys in group get their money, pour their money together, and start like a little corner store, grocery store. It may not be Albertsons or Safeway or Wawa, but there'll be something there where people don't have to drive miles down the road. If they don't even have cars, they got to catch a bus to go to their grocery store.
And they could make it. They could make it a legit business to launder some of that dope money too. I'm just saying.
Yeah, and then like you got these young kids out here.
Hold on, let me make a disclaimer. The T-Smitty 3000 show, Block to Radio, its advertisers and affiliates do not endorse illegal activities, nor do not endorse the use of businesses to launder drug money. Any commentaries made in this show is just for entertainment and potentially educational purposes only, and is not to be taken as advice for illegal activities. Carry on.
Appreciate that. But, you know, let's look at it this way. Like you said, like a store, for example. And I touched on this earlier, like black male, teenage male, Chicago guy, 95% unemployment rate in Chicago. I'm sorry, in Chicago. Think about that. So let's say you have a little local grocery store in the area, and you know this. Let's say you left the grocery store you just left from. Look at all the side businesses that are there. You may have a pet store, a dry cleaner, a bank right there, a couple like little restaurants, like a sandwich shop or something. Like, well, me, there's a pool supply store, all kind of things over there, a pet store, all that stuff. Look at how many of those places where you may have teenagers that can work at. And a lot of these young boys out here may have a little bit of money, take a little girlfriend at Applebee's or something. You know?
Okay, here's the thing. I'm glad you just brought the whole thing about, you know, teenagers to work. Well, with the new laws that, you know, and I know somebody's going to say I sound like a sellout Uncle Tom Republican. I don't give a fuck. I'm not an American anyway, so I don't care about pussycrats and Republicans. But with that whole thing of what you mentioned, young kids working, if they push that law to raise the minimum wage nationwide to $15 an hour, who's going to hire young children with experience for the very first job to earn $15 an hour? When the whole thing about $15 an hour is to make it a livable wage so grown-ups can do it. So that's pretty much shutting young kids out of the labor market unless you pay them below minimum wage, which would be illegal. So, and that's a repercussion I don't think the lawmakers thought about it, or if they did, they don't give a damn. But carry on. What the hell do I know? I'm just a foreign observer.
That might be another show topic, the minimum wage. Here's the thing. Speaking of that, there's another thing these civil rights people always talk about. You know, always want better government for minimum wage, all this stuff. Here's one thing. Two things. Do you really think Taquiniqua at Walmart deserved $15 an hour? And here's another one. What's the point of having $15 an hour if there are no jobs available that will pay $15 an hour? And here's a third one. Y'all quit focusing on McDonald's. Worry about Joe's Burger Shack, who may not be able to pay those salaries and let people go. And here's another one. You look at Seattle. People over there are losing their government benefits because now they make too much money. So that's some things that people, this is why I talk about economic empowerment, where you don't have to worry about those things. And if that's all you want to do is do that, hey, let's have a local company, local burger shop that you work at. But here's the thing, though. Just because they throw more money in your face, they're doing it for a reason. Because I think the minimum wage has been raised like 32 times since it's been instituted. Obviously, giving more money ain't the problem. And I'll say this real quick. I know people get mad at me about this. They say, oh, man, everybody can't get a PhD. I say, look here, you don't have about roughly 30% of Americans that have like a college degree, a bachelor's degree. Most Americans don't have the drive for that. You got to have the drive and sacrifice to even get that degree. There could be some nights where you can't get no tail, but you got to study for that exam. You can't go to that party. You can't smoke that dope. You can't have that bottle of alcohol because you got to handle your business. But we don't get taught that. We get taught to have fun. We get taught to, you know, beg for opportunities. We get taught to, hey, Mr. Officer, please stop beating on me. But yet we won't put ourselves in a position to play the game like everybody else. Because we keep talking about, oh, this spending power black people have, this spending power, this power we have. But yet we don't aggregate our resources to make it happen. Because everybody loves talking about local elections. Damn, just voting. Because Asians have the lowest voter turnout, but they get shit done. You know why? Because they got money, they got some businesses there, and they can say, hey, we'll take these jobs away. And so with us in local elections, we can just say, hey, look, here's this money. We want this done. If you won't get this done, we won't give you this. Or we won't give you any more. We'll give it to somebody else. But because of the capitalist society, and we keep trying not to play by the rules of the game. Because, like, let's say you play basketball. If you move, if you run by dribbling, it's traveling. We can't say it's not traveling. The rules say it's traveling. We have to just say, hey, we got to play by the rules of the game. And because I say this real quick. People got to understand, like Ferguson, Missouri, for example. The mayor, Jay Knowles, ran on a campaign fund of $2,600. You go in any black man closet right now, his shoes probably cost more than $2,600. And that's how much the campaign fund. But what happened also, you'll see you got lawyers donate $150, like a mechanic, like a guy on the auto shop, $200. Putting up little, not a whole lot of money, but that little bit of money added up. So what's stopping us, for, like to say Ferguson, Missouri, for example, to put up $2,600 or $3,000?
Once again, you're guilty of excessive logical thinking. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what else to say, man.
You know, it's just that it just kills me is that we are trying to play the game by different rules. It's like in soccer. They say you can't touch the ball with your hands unless you're a goalie. A handball. You can't go around saying, I'm going to do a handball anyway, because guess what? You put it the wrong side of the field, you go part of the field, it'll be a free kick, like a penalty kick. I like soccer. But, you know, but here's a, but the thing is that, so you can't play by your own rules. You got to play by the rules presented and win by those rules. We're in a capitalist society. Politicians, including your first black president, Barack Obama, is moved by money. The civil rights generation gave us symbolism. Oh, man, he's a black president. We should criticize him. We should criticize everyone that we put our votes behind. They should be open to criticism. Y'all want to say not to criticize Bush? And I thought he was a terrible president, but besides the point, we should criticize our leaders. Criticism isn't hate. Criticism sometimes is a point of love and want you to do better.
And there is such a thing called constructive criticism.
Yeah, because, you know, you got the civil rights generation, you know, your John Lewis's, your Al Sharpton saying they'll never criticize the president. And now they looking at wanting Hillary, and Hillary stood by Bill when he, Bill Clinton, when he put those policies in, the three strikes you're out. It could be three dope charges, felony dope charges. That, a lot of times, those are like, you know, victimless crimes are still going for life. But Hillary, never in her time in Congress, I said before, never in the years she was in the Senate, stepped foot in front of the House or Senate, Congress, whatever, and said, we need to change these laws. Never did it. And she's supposed to be a liberal. And that's why I say black people, do not let these civil rights people tell you Donald Trump is this boogeyman. Because low-key, now I'm not voting for him. I'm not voting for Trump at all. But low-key, a lot of those issues, he's moderate. And then the racist stuff he says, it ain't got nothing to do with us. I don't care what he says about Latinos. I don't care what he says about these Middle Eastern Muslims. Because I won't tell you why. Because we walk in their stores, those two groups treat us like shit. Excuse my language. So I don't care what they say about them. I'm not fighting for you. Because when these unarmed black males and females get shot, where were they at? Nowhere to be found. So I'm not fighting for them. And the problem is the civil rights generation wants to fight for those people. They want to fight for Native Americans, for instance. They were so oppressed. And you go all over the country, they got these casinos where they ain't got to pay these taxes. They get tribal funding for school, and they get to hire their own with those casinos. Where's ours at? Native Americans ain't fighting with us to get those. Nor are they hiring us. Because we got plenty of them here in Phoenix. A bunch of Native Americans working at casinos. Even like the food, your restaurants in that place, even like the fast food spots or your whatever spots in that casino, Native Americans working there too. They got jobs. Where is ours at? And you see this stat talking about Native Americans are getting like high percentage of people shot by police. One, they got a smaller population than us. Two, cry me a fucking river because they won't call it. They won't talk to us. They won't come to us. Well, fight for us when we're getting gunned down or unemployed or all that good stuff. They don't do that. So we shouldn't be fighting for them. But the civil rights generation, they want to fight for everybody, but won't even fight for us. Because how many of these people in the civil rights generation will say, hey, black? How many times do you hear people of color? And you take the SAT, they know people of color section. When you apply for a job, there's no people of color section.
It's either black or white.
Thank you. We are black. But they say, oh, people of color. People of color, that means everybody, because everybody got a color. We ain't everybody. But we continue to let people in their 70s and 80s, we'll talk about you also, Minister Farrakhan, speak for us. We let our oldest people speak for us. These people, knock on wood, doesn't happen. I hope it doesn't happen. Could drop dead tomorrow in their sleep. But we let them lead us. We've been fed a hill of beans talking about, oh, the Democrats are great. These same people tell us Democrats are so great. They've done nothing. Nothing. To help black people. They say, oh, we'll protect you from the racist Republicans. These Democrats are just as racist. Look, everybody talking about like the Hollywood is so right, white Hollywood is so racist. Most of the liberal whites who run Hollywood. Those people
Democrat.
Are friends of Clinton. Yeah, they're white Democrats. Hillary Clinton is a Democrat, even though she... And oh, yeah, by the way, y'all boy Obama set policies like a Republican. They have a conservative mindset. They just go Democrat to get y'all votes. And oh, yeah, by the way, hate to break it to y'all Republicans out there, y'all bigots. Donald Trump is using y'all for votes as well. Donald Trump don't even believe half the stuff y'all believe in. He is using y'all for votes. Kind of like Sonny Perdue did in Georgia, the governor of Georgia. Where he talked about, hey, we'll keep this Confederate flag up, screw y'all, whatever. Not even like a month or two, his governorship, Confederate flag went down. So, and they using Trump to scare y'all into voting for Hillary Clinton.
Well, come on, everybody knows Trump and the Clintons are good buddies. I mean,
yep.
Trump. We know he didn't like Obama. We know he publicly endorsed Hillary in 2008. You know, that's no secret. And you know, he's a Trojan. He's not even a Trojan horse, because everybody should know. I mean, it's plain, it's obvious, plain as day that, you know, he is there. You're right. To okay, let me put it this way. What I liken Trump to is the way in Haiti when, you know, back in the day, when Papa Doc, Duvalier, when my dad explained to me, there was this one guy, he was a very strong, staunch nationalist, you know, who wanted to, you know, redo Haiti's infrastructure, you know, have us do manufacturing, you know, make us be self-sufficient. And if there's one thing the U.S. government doesn't like, is countries near its backyard that are nationalist, socialist, communist, whatever. So the military that were like all basically CIA agents, they said, let's take this guy, you know, Papa Doc, who was this popular doctor, who was popular with the people because he helped eradicate this public health epidemic, and we'll control him like a puppet because he was popular with the people. So in the same fashion, I think that the powers that be felt, hey, Trump is real. He's popular with the people. He's a reality TV star. He's going to get people reinterested in the GOP. Well, not my thoughts. I'm just plagiarizing from Dr. Ramona Brockett. But basically, they were like, okay, you know, he's a character. He's going to get people interested in GOP, and he's going to lose steam, and then we can put our person up. I guess nobody, even Donald Trump himself, thought that he would get this far and be that popular. And now what's happening is, you know, the white supremacists who are endorsing him, showing support, you know, thanks to him, they're kind of revealing themselves for their true nature. And that's where we are now.
Hey, you know, and my thing is that I just look at it as, and again, people, number is 347-850-1065. Don't know how much longer I'm going to be here, but here's the thing. Look at this, like I said, the civil rights generation. We were scared of politicians 50 years ago, white politicians, but we're scared of them now. Correct me if I'm wrong here. Find me another group of people who are scared of Donald Trump.
Nobody.
Thank you. We're all also scared because the media tells
like him. The others who don't like him are probably looking for a way to get rid of him. But they're not running scared.
We're running scared, and we're looking at a white. Now it looks like we're going to ask a white woman to save us. Know how pathetic that is. That's pretty pathetic, if you don't mind, you know, if you ask me. We're going to ask a white woman to save us. And how much can we be saved? And the question I would ask is, let's go civil rights people. How much worse can it get for us? We had 8 years of symbolism and swag and Instagram photo ops. Now, that might be a topic for a picture show. But anyway, how much worse, if Trump became president, how much worse could it get?
8 years in the Instagram slave?
Yeah. Because this past president, I don't hate Barack Obama. Certain things that he did do that I actually liked. But when it came to black only, we didn't get anything. All we got was swag, symbolism, and pictures of his family. And oh, yeah, by the way, and Michelle Obama was a light white woman with a high yellow, y'all wouldn't be liking his family. But
he would have never been voted in if she was a mulatto or light skinned, you know. If she was light skinned, as Negroes like to say.
Yeah. And so my whole thing is that, you know, we have to demand more. We have to stop taking a subservient, docile role. Because I want everybody to look at like Django Unchained. That was a part with Calvin Candy. That's why I described the civil rights generation. Where he took the skull of, I think it was Stephen's father or grandfather, one of them. And Calvin was trying to figure out, why are black people so docile? He was like, this man shaved my daddy's face for all these years, never once tried to slit his throat. And Calvin Candy was like, I would have slit his throat. Even if, pretty much if they would have killed me, they had to kill me. But I'm going to slit his throat. But we're laying docile again. And we're still being told to do that now. And that part, because see, a lot of people don't realize, in movies, there's a lot of game and knowledge in these movies that they slip in. And it's like even Departed, the opening scene Departed, where they said, I'm paraphrasing it because I don't have it on me right now, because they know I probably have with the black, what say, the niggers. They want something given to them, but they don't take it. In this country, you got to take it. And you have to build and you have to take it. No one respects powerless people. Power respects power. We cannot make the civil rights generation fail in this regard. We cannot make white people like us. Who gives a damn if they like us or respect us? We should have had our, especially at black businesses then, those businesses should have grown. And we had our own institutions for our kids to work in and the grandkids to work in and pass on and run and to hire other black people. Because we're the ones that cry about workplace discrimination. How many black people you see working in Asian businesses or Latino businesses? You don't see that many, do you? We're the only ones that try to get into everybody's businesses. But what I'm going to do is I just want to get out here for a while and talk a little bit. But I just want to close with this. I might do a show this weekend, depending on how my schedule is. But I just want to say, hey, you guys download the show. I say thank you. Now, this topic may not have been popular, but it's true once you guys to think. I want you guys to think about things. And we also have to think about tackling this economically as well, because we tried to go to school route. We tried to be nice and dress up in suits route. We tried to the Jesus route. Let's try the economic route for our kids.
Nothing wrong with the go to school route. It's just that you got a lot of people who used to go to school route and went to take underwater basket weaving instead of a field like, engineering, or science, or even something lucrative as opposed to just social work and anthropology. Let's be honest. Social work does not pay.
And yeah, I get a master's through that.
Yes, you get in a lot of debt. You get some of those fields, you get in a lot of student loan debt, and it doesn't pay, and you end up making less money than some of the people whose cases you're working get in benefits, a very low return on investment. I mean, it's not just go to school, get a good job. It's be smart about what you want to pick for your major, and don't be so wishy-washy. If you go to college route, have a plan as to what you want to do and stick to it. Don't just be wishy-washy, not going. I mean, look, if you're black, you cannot afford to go as an undeclared, trying to explore stuff.
And you know what? I'll say this real quick on that. See, black people, have to be honest with you for a second. You're going to have to take some math and some science. Get over it. Because everybody complaining about McDonald's, for example, going to these machines, get rid of people. Touch on that for a second, but I get to my real point on that. So think about it. Since y'all want to raise this minimum wage up, for example, all they really end up needing are people who can just open boxes and take deliveries. And what the thing is, that's where many of you, especially young people out there, learn how to fix those machines and be a contractor and fix those machines. But also when it comes to being a contractor, make sure you have you in a good CPA and like a tax attorney as well. So people who can stay on top of those things for you also. Because when you have a job, that tax money comes out, it's checked. But when you're that contractor/business owner, you got to pay that money. So you got to have people like that pay the fee so that you'll be straight in that as well. But I'm saying the world is changing. For example, I got a cousin. She talking about she want to go to school for journalism. I'm like, journalism is dead. If you want to go to journalism, start your blog online. And many people who are working at ESPN don't have journalism degrees. It's like, so the thing is that you cannot skate your way out of this. You're going to have to get your hands dirty. Because let's say like a Jewish judge or lawyer still had to spend a lot of hours at night and on the weekend studying for those bar exams. You got those people out here who want to go into like the engineering fields or the STEM fields. There's a lot of nights, a lot of hours. Study those hard math fields.
Hey,
there's a reason.
That professor I told you about who told me that out of the 119 that we'd be lucky if only 19 of us came out as bio majors, the very first lecture he told us, he said, for this major, when your friends are going out partying, you will spend nights where you're gonna be up studying and where you can't go out to party. So if you're not willing to make the sacrifice, you can quit now. You can withdraw right now, you know? No penalty.
Yeah. And the thing is that we should have had institutions built where we groomed young black people for like certain fields. Kind of like look at India, for example. They're grooming, they got institutions grooming their kids for IT. And you look around, we have talented black people out there who in the IT who done like great things. I like the brother the cell phone, or like you got even I'll say the toilet, the super soaker, where a black man invented that. So we have the talent, but we just gotta have the infrastructure in place where we can teach these kids. Because for example, that's a white guy right now who dropped out of MIT, started a school in the Bay Area of California, Silicon Valley, where it's not even like getting a grade. It's all about your ideas. Like people won't go to IT, for example. And if they get I forgot how it went exactly, but they get a job or whatever, saying it whatever they I did it, that's what they pay him. So it's pretty much expressing ideas. And he wants there's somebody doing it. I use Boyce Watkins as an example because the person I know right now. Use that as an example. People get mad by spending money. People ain't trying to hustle you. People can't give you services for free. And a man has a PhD in finance, and you know this. That's one of the hardest PhDs to get. And so the man's experience, and he's willing to give you that. And also the thing is networking with other people. Because like I said, I live in Phoenix. I could network with somebody who lives there in Montana or Seattle or Dallas. You know, someone in Dallas make a website for me, a black person. So it's just things of that sort that we have to take, look at. But I'm going to go ahead and shut this down. I'll probably do one on Sunday. I might talk about Obama or something. And here's another thing. I want to say this real quick. Black people, we got to get serious on this stuff as well. You know, I look on Facebook groups on there. If somebody talks politics, economics, you don't get many comments. But when it's talking about relationships, everybody got something to say. But our economics and the politics will affect our relationships with the A. So we need to pay attention to stuff as well. Hey, you guys have a great day, and then guys look at download, the archive. Hey, thank you guys for that too. Hey, but I'll see you guys later. Hey, you guys have a great evening and be safe out there. And remember, I'll leave you guys.
Baby is not your baby daddy.
That too, but I'll leave you guys with this. Go to a graveyard and look at how many people. Not saying the older people, it'd be a lot of young people who passed. Who thought they had tomorrow promise. Just think about that. Hey, you don't have tomorrow promise. Today is a day where you make a change. Today is a day where you say, hey, I appreciate the fight they put in here 50 years ago, but it's a new fight now, and we're not looking at trying to pray our way or wear a suit our way out. or respectability our way out. We're looking at economics. I get our way out economically. But hey, you guys have a great evening. You guys take care.
All right, man. Take care. Goodbye.
All right, peace.